Welcome to Unmasked, where the truth behind cyber threats is revealed. Join us as we take a quick dive into the dark corners of the digital world, stripping away the mask of anonymity, exposing the risks and vulnerabilities that lurk beneath the surface. Get ready to uncover the secrets of cybersecurity and fortify your defenses. Brought to you by Assura, cybersecurity uncompromised. Hi, welcome out to another episode of Unmasked. I'm Paul Blacker, your host, along with the director of offensive security for Assura, Nick Berry. Nick, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Paul.
Absolutely. Thanks for making the trek down from Northern Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you've been traveling quite a bit lately, and last week we had CyberCon that we attended from RVA Tech over at the Dominion Energy Arts Center over there. And what'd you think about it? I thought it was a great event.
Yeah, way more attendees than I anticipated.
Yeah, so. I heard that it was over 400 or something like that.
Yeah,
so that's a great number.
Definitely felt like it. Yeah, the vendor hall was definitely crowded in between sessions, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think they said this year there was over 16 or 17 like sponsor vendor people compared to their first year, which they apparently had one, I think, official. So nice. That was good. Yeah. And you got to attend some of the speaking engagements.
Yeah.
Which one do you go to?
Went to a couple of the CISO tracks, mm-hmm. and then went into one of the technical AI focused tracks, where the vice president of Mandiant was speaking about how AI is kind of changing digital forensics, and it had a lot of good. It was really more of a panel, kind of an AMA type thing, and there was a lot of good questions around what the impact of AI is going to be as threat actors begin adopting it and defenders begin adopting it.
I was going to say, we hear AI now all the time, but you know, what does it mean for the regular business?
Yeah, I think the biggest impact that we're going to see, at least in the immediate future, is the ability to automate kind of menial or entry-level tasks. Not to say that those tasks aren't valuable, but that they're easily done by AI or, you know, some sort of automated
system. Is this stuff like help desk and like sort of those first point of contact type things?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of that become automated. I think you're going to even see certain levels of security roles. You know, inside of offensive security, defensive security, GRC, where some of those really manual tasks that we understand them at a great level, which means that the AI understands them at a great level, which tends to be like, that's where we're at.
Because it's been taught by us.
Exactly. Yes. And I think that was the big takeaway from all the conversations, is that, yeah, we don't really know where we're going, and that's a scary thing. And how to regulate it is a scary thing because nobody really understands it. That was a big topic there, is kind of ChatGPT let the cat out of the bag, and then they all ran, you know, the big AI creators.
That's right. We were joking end of last year about releasing the chatbot, right?
Like, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, exactly. They all released it, and once it's out, it's kind of hard to put the genie back in the bottle, and that's now where we're seeing how are we going to govern this now extremely powerful technology that nobody – I mean, AI has been a topic for, heck, back into the 60s or 70s, I believe. But it's never been something that's been as realized as it is currently.
Right. And the growth of it is so quick now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's been one of those things where the last 5-10 years, it's kind of been slowly happening and nobody was really paying attention. And now it seems like, holy crap, there's this like thing going on that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, I think the past few years, everybody was, you know, the blockchain bros were the big headliners. And now we're seeing that AI is here, and I believe it is here to stay. It's not just a fad. And I think that's really cool because in one way, it threatens a lot of the way that we currently do things. But much like the Industrial Revolution, you know, kind of we're in the middle of a technological revolution. And it's getting our heads wrapped around what the right things to do are, what the wrong things to do are, mostly what the wrong things to do are, and how are we going to deal with those. And so I think that's where everybody's mind is kind of at right now, is figuring out what the right path is. But I do think that there's a lot of upside to adopting AI and these various language models that can help us out. There's also, like I said, the downsides, and we have to measure those and weigh those risks, which is going to be difficult. I went to the DEF CON this past summer and sat in on the White House's panel where they talked about mm-hmm. the impact of AI, and specifically they were talking because they had the AI village there where there was a competition, kind of red teaming AI to see where they could find vulnerabilities and weaknesses.
Sure.
So there was a big conversation around how do we regulate this? And of course, nobody had a really good answer.
Well, and you know, anything coming from federal, you know, obviously it's all political, right?
Yes.
It goes back to that. And they could have the best mandates and intentions in the world, but depending on who's in office and who's not, I mean, depend on whether it actually happens or not and trickles down.
And that, I think that was the biggest takeaway from that conversation, that panel at DEF CON, was the White House is aware of what needs to happen. They've came out with the AI Bill of Rights. They've had conversations with the Big Five in AI development around morals and ethics and watermarking so that we actually can identify when AI is being used, various things like that. But the question came up during the panel of, you know, somebody walked up and said, of course, if we regulate it and you hamstring all of us here in the United States, at least in the public sector.
What about everybody else, right?
What about everybody else? What about
and that's always the question, I think, with technology. Like, you know, America, thank you for, you know, putting guidelines and parameters on us. But the other people that we're trying to look out for don't have those constraints.
Exactly. And I think that's probably, you know, especially for us being in the U.S., that's probably our biggest concern is like, okay, we are going to be held to the, you know, between these guardrails of what is right and wrong, at least according to kind of the Big Five and the government entities that regulate it. But what about the rest of the world that's unregulated, or threat actors or criminals who are totally unregulated and could care less about the law?
Right.
You know, how are we going to deal with that?
How do you find that like affects your job in offensive security to provide that sort of layer or opportunities for assessment or anything for companies, whether they're private or public?
Yeah. So I think right now it's probably too early to tell exactly. I mean, there's people that have been working in the AI space for a long time. Like I said, it dates back, you know, the first ideas of AI have existed long before I did. so there are experts in it, but it's not probably something that's widespread. And so I think there's a big opportunity there for people to become experts in that. And so as companies adopt AI, coming up with what their framework of, you know, how are they going to stay moral and ethical, but also maintain an advantage, them coming up with kind of their own regulations on that is important. Testing those models to ensure that they actually reflect those morals and values is another piece of it, because we've seen that in the past where AI has been used to vet people for loans and things like that. And of course, based off of biased information that it's been provided, it's taken an unethical route.
You know, so I'm obviously the non-techie person, right? But in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, well then from a penetration testing side, does testing AI become a web app test, or is that still part of the regular external internal? Like, where does that fall within the testing realm?
Yeah. So AI, as I have seen it, and we do leverage some AI, and we've played around with some AI tools, the way that I've seen AI, again, is that it's really good at what we know really well because it's been fed such a large model. So traditional network penetration testing, infrastructure audits, that type of thing, AI does really well with it. When it comes to finding like bespoke or unique vulnerabilities that haven't existed before, it's not great at it because there's so much nuance to that.
It's not part of the formula it already has an answer to.
Yeah. If you were to take an application and feed like the entire code base to an AI model and have it look for vulnerabilities, it would probably do really well. How often is that occurring, and is that realistic for most companies? Probably not that realistic. So I would say right now, the models that we've seen and that that are really available to the most of the public. They do pretty well with, like I said, those basic kind of junior mid-level penetration testing engagements, and they're really thorough. They're very consistent, which I think is important, that you're not missing things, right?
You know,
that's always the human element, is like, we miss things, we make mistakes. The AI, it may make mistakes, but it's going to be far more consistent than a human, especially on that junior entry level side. And I think we're going to see that across the entirety of cybersecurity, IT, healthcare. I mean, really everywhere, is that those junior tasks.
Anything that has that sort of technology capabilities, potentially the AI could come in and be that first level.
Yeah.
Where, you know, before they were hiring the college kid that
you know,
just needed something or whatever.
Yeah. So I think there's two things to kind of address there, is that one, I do think that the AI will get to the point where it is able to get to those more nuanced vulnerabilities, defensive capabilities. I think that it will get there. It just, again, comes down to how we're training the models, and that just takes time, and feeding the right data and making sure that we're getting the right results, so that we can rule out kind of false positives, false negatives in the model. And then beyond that, I think this also leads us to a real moral quandary in the industry, and not just cybersecurity, not just IT, but like across everything. Specifically in cybersecurity, we talk about there's 3 million unfilled cybersecurity jobs, right? And we see already that most of those jobs are not entry level. You know, you see training programs, universities, commercials, what have you, pushing that this is the field to get into because there's so many unfilled jobs. The reality of that is that most of them are mid-level, senior, executive level positions. So we're raising the bar by adopting AI. We're going to raise that entry level bar even further. And so I think that's something that the industry and multiple industries really have to consider as we're adopting this, is that we can't destroy our own pipelines, because we're all going to need to retire eventually. So having a plan.
And that, you know, that sort of funnel used to be, okay, there's a tech program in the high school, let's get those kids into an internship during their summer break. Then they go off to college and they come back during their breaks and they continue to learn and, you know, get the expertise. But now if we're saying, okay, potentially AI is going to take the place of sort of those generic, you know, base level opportunities, then that means when they get out of college or whoever's starting to look, they've got to already have sort of the, maybe the second tier of knowledge and experience. How are they going to get it?
Yeah, that's the big question that needs to be answered, I think. And I think it's one of the ramifications of AI that a lot of people aren't considering. And they're seeing the upsides of it, that, hey, we can gain consistency, we can gain efficiency, we can gain, you know, you name it. But what are we losing by doing that?
Right.
And I don't think it means that we stop and that we don't adopt AI. I think we would be kind of foolish not to do that, because when we especially in cybersecurity or any sort of defensive capability across, you know, the government and or the US, if we don't adopt it, we're going to be behind. That's right. Just reality. We have to do it. We just have to do it in a way that's intentional. And again, think of what those consequences are and how are we going to offset those consequences. So I think coming up with a better strategy across the industry for dealing with entry-level employees and redefining what entry-level
means.
What
that looks like, yeah.
And how do we get people there? Because we already know that, you know, kind of the education system, the training systems, the certification system, you name it, it's already difficult and it's already not producing great results. You have some people that come out really high flyers and you have some that don't, that they maybe are able to get those certifications, get the degrees, but they don't have the actual operational knowledge.
The hands-on, right.
And it's like, well, how do we close that gap? And so, I think that's one of the big things that we'll have to address, and it becomes, like I said, even more important as AI raises that bar even further away from where they're at right now.
So obviously AI is one of those things that, you know, sort of into last year and now obviously a bigger focus in 2024. Are there any other things on the offensive side that are sort of new or coming up this year that you've heard about in the industry or for, you know, better practices or guidelines?
Yeah, I think that obviously we're going to see kind of AI reshape a lot of things. And I think that's just across the industry as a whole. Here, at least inside the state of Virginia, you know, we have SEC 530 for state agencies, and local, state and local agencies coming out. Going to be due, what, in March?
March 31st is the deadline for that,
And so with that, like, at least in my space, we're seeing, you know, vulnerability management is going to be a big push.
Okay.
Again, automation and AI is going to help with that because SEC 530 is implementing a 30-day rule for vulnerability remediation. Mm-hmm. So you have to have either a vuln remediated or have, you know, a good plan in place with, you know, are we accepting the risk? We're going to do a risk exemption. You know, how are you going to handle that? You have to have taken action. And that's going to be a pretty strict timeline where, you know, I think we've seen a lot of state agencies are already having a difficult time meeting the previous timelines. And now we're seeing, hey, you've got a month to have this addressed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even in the wastewater industry sector, you know, there was a mandate from the White House last year. It didn't get adopted or passed. And then the EPA came back and said, hey, you guys really should look at these guidelines and you really should have some plan in place. And I think we're going to find more of that. Like you said, I mean, at some point, the not doing anything just doesn't count. Like, it's not valid anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not taking action, you're just opening. As we continue to see organizations being held accountable and CISOs or CEOs being held accountable for the lack of attention and care that they're giving to their cybersecurity programs, you're going to want to start doing those things.
Yeah.
Because if you're blatantly ignoring a problem, there may be a real penalty for you in the future.
Yeah, well, you know, and a lot of the cybersecurity insurance policies are matching up with those sort of requirements and saying, okay, you know, did you have these things leading up to this potential, you know, hack or you know, conflict? Technically, it's not a breach.
Yeah.
That's a legal term. But
well, yeah, that's something we're seeing a lot with cyber liability policies. You know, as we scope out pen tests, and you and I get on calls with clients all the time, and it's like one of the first questions we ask is kind of, what is the driving factor behind this pen test? Why do you want to do this?
Yeah.
And we tease that out. And that's what we're seeing more and more of is, hey, we're being told we have to do this.
Right.
Previously, it was like a luxury. And now it's like, you have to do this and it has to be held to, you know, a certain standard. And that's the when we, you know, don't get me started on standards for pen testing, because unfortunately they're not well defined. You know, we get clients that come to us and say, hey, we were told we need a pen test. Okay. What type of pen test do you need? And they don't know. And we work with them and we figure out what works for them and what will.
And I think, that's like a knowledge thing, right? Like cybersecurity, it means cybersecurity. No, it actually means a lot of different things.
Yeah. So with the standards, you know, it's not well defined most of the time. And so, yeah, we tease that out with the clients and we figure out what is it that's going to satisfy their needs, but not just satisfy their needs, but actually benefit their security program in the long term and really try to drive to create a partnership there for them. So, yeah, we're seeing a lot of that. So like I said, SEC 530 with their vuln requirements, we're seeing things with penetration test requirements from cyber liability policies. And I think something else that we'll probably see this year is that universities are probably going to start getting dinged when they get audited for GLBA compliance, where they're going to need a pen test or more. Yeah. Or more.
Depending on where their program is.
Yeah. You know, that's, we've had quite a few conversations with universities that are aware that they need a pen test. And so we've done quite a few of those in the past year for GLBA compliance, specifically around their financial and student services systems, student accounting systems. But I think in the coming year, those that are unaware, unfortunately, are going to find out via their auditors that they missed the deadlines on those things. And so it's going to become more imperative that they go ahead and get those things done. So, you know, industry trends, at least as they affect Assura, I think those are in our client base. I think those are going to be the big ones that we'll see.
Are there any cool tools or software that's coming out other than the AI? Like,
there's always cool tools and software.
I know. That's why I asked you, because you're usually like, you know, there's people who are gadget guys and you're like a tool software guy.
Yeah. So. Yeah. For me, the past year or two, I've been just really into vulnerability intelligence. I think staying on the cutting edge, not only from a vulnerability management perspective, but attack surface management, penetration testing, you know, and then you get more advanced into like red teaming and purple teaming tactics. I think vuln intelligence is just becoming so important across all of the space and even on the defensive side and understanding attacks and what to look for. We're seeing just such high quality vulnerability intelligence coming out now about where vulnerabilities are coming from, what products, what vendors, what services they're in, what's the likelihood of those things becoming realized. Because that's the big thing that we talk about, especially with our clients, is taking like a risk-based approach to vulnerability management. And knowing whether something is likely to become exploited, is exploitable, has, you know, publicly available exploits, that type of thing, is super important. And understanding the context of your assets, the mission and business function of them, the data security requirements around those assets and the data that's in them or on them, you know, all of those things we take into account. And I think vulnerability intelligence has become like really central to that. So there's a lot of organizations that are doing some really cool things. Project Discovery just released a new CVE mapper tool that does a lot of free and open source vulnerability intelligence, or provides a lot of vulnerability intelligence capabilities where you can just look up a CVE. So, you know, just thinking in my head real quick, you could probably script a nice little bash script or Python script to take your Nessus scans and pull all the CVEs and do lookups on them, that type of thing. So, and then of course we have our partner Nucleus. They have their vulnerability intelligence platform. So we're excited to join the Nucleus vulnerability intelligence platform, VIP. So that'll be exciting. You know, Nucleus has been kind of on the forefront of risk-based vuln management here in the past few years. So we're excited for that. But also, you know, Mandiant Advantage that puts out really good vulnerability intelligence. We use that on a regular basis. Graynoise does some really cool things, studying new and emerging threats in the vulnerability space and getting early detections out there. So, yeah, we're really focused heavily on how we can leverage that to help prioritize and secure, you know, our clients, and also leverage it for ourselves as penetration testers and in the offensive security space. Just so that we're staying abreast of what the new and emerging threats are.
Sure. If there was like one sort of go-to tip, starting point for a company, I've never had any kind of cybersecurity, anything. What's the sort of go-to for where they should begin?
Ooh, that's a tough question. If I could pick one control for someone to implement, is that what you mean?
Yeah. Let's go with that one. Okay. Control. Yeah. From your side, your expertise.
If I could implement one control in any environment and that was all I could do, I would pick multi-factor authentication.
Okay.
Push-based or FIDO, you know, not SMS or email based. Don't do that. but I would go multi-factor authentication because it covers up a plethora of sins. Let's put it that way.
Gotcha. And it's, you know, low barrier of entry, right?
It is. Yeah. For the most part, you know, you look at some of the popular options that are out there and it's really not difficult to deploy. Yeah. There might be a little bit of user pushback in the beginning, but deploy MFA, and don't just deploy MFA in one place. Deploy MFA everywhere that you can deploy MFA. I think that's one of the weaknesses that we see, especially pen testing, is somebody may, you know, integrate Active Directory with MFA, but they miss this other web application that's totally, you know, tied right into all their systems. It is the mission, you know, critical function inside their organization. It's MFA capable, but they didn't, you know, deploy it for that business function. It's like, okay, do it everywhere that you can. I would say if I could pick one and only control, that would be the one I would pick. And I would say deploy it everywhere that you possibly can.
Awesome. Well, Nick, thank you for your time today. We really appreciate you kind of bringing us up speed with what's in store for 2024, as we're trying to say this year, and learn some of these new sort of offensive security guidelines, tips. And I'm sure we'll have you back on the show soon. So thanks so much.
Yeah, it was great coming down. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thanks.